I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, according to Democrats, I'm just a right-wing social media influencer, so why do they seem so worried? Plus, Governor Bob Ferguson is trying to play the hero by proposing cuts to the state budget, but what he's really doing is setting up his fellow Democrats to take the fall for new taxes. Plus, a major victory as the initiative killer meets its demise. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who help support our show and our mission and our movement. It's amazing how triggered our little old podcast gets people. We're just a little old show, you know? It's just me and Nicole hanging out in a makeshift garage talking about politics. I mean, why have we bothered people so much? Here's the thing, though. What happens when someone's backed into a corner? When you back a rabid animal into a corner, they're going to lash out, right? They're fighting for their lives. Well, right now, the far left is fighting for its life when it comes to radical gender ideology. And so they are absolutely lashing out at us. And you know what? That's okay. I don't mind being lashed out at. I actually enjoy it quite a bit. So as you know, in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we've sort of been at the center of this story out of the Thurston County School District, or the Tumwater, rather, school district in Washington State. So we had first done an interview with a young woman named Frances Stout, who is 15 years old, and decided that she was not going to play in her final basketball game of the year because there was a biological boy on the other team. And so we did two. I mean, it's fascinating that there's been so much, like, unhinged behavior over these interviews, because we did two very thoughtful, long-form interviews on this story. We interviewed, of course, Frances Stout and had her and her mom on the show for an hour or so. And then we turned around and we interviewed the transgender athlete, Andy Rooks, and had a fantastic conversation with Andy about Andy's perspective on all of this. So it was a really, you know, in-depth, thoughtful, respectful dialogue. And then you saw adults on the far left just lose their ever-loving minds over the fact that we're raising these issues around biological boys competing against girls. So there's been some updates on this over the weekend. As you know, we didn't have a live show on Thursday, but that doesn't stop the news from newsing. So first, just a reminder, here's part of our interview with Frances Stout and her mom, you know, talking about, again, this is a teenage girl who has to be the one to put herself out there because she's trying to stand up for what she knows to be right.
I think it's a shame because I am young and I'm still a teenager, and to think that I have to be the one to stand up. I'm not afraid to stand up. I am very strong in my beliefs, and I'm not scared, but I do think it's a shame that I have to be the one.
Yeah, and it's also a shame that after she stands up as a 15-year-old, you have teachers in her own school, in her own district, and the Tumwater Education Association basically trying to shame her for what she did. So something really interesting has happened here, and I think pretty significant. So for those of you who don't know, I would say that Tumwater is a pretty progressive place. I mean, we're talking about near Olympia. We've done stories on the Tumwater Education Association, the Tumwater School Board, the Tumwater School District, and sort of the radical social indoctrination and political indoctrination in schools. So this is by no means like some school district in Eastern Washington in a red conservative place. Well, they had a school board meeting while we were on this break over the a long break from Thursday's show. And they voted. It's interesting because the news articles that you see out there aren't quite accurate, but here's the King 5 News headline. It says, Tumwater School Board bans transgender girls from playing girls' sports, which, of course, that just means they ban boys from playing girls' sports. It says the vote sparked a protest inside district headquarters, leading to the cancellation of the remainder of the meeting. So a few things here. Let me just correct the King 5 headline. First, they didn't vote, the Tumwater School Board didn't vote to ban boys from playing against girls. They can't do that on an island. In Washington State, our state policies and WIAA says that you get to participate in the sport that aligns with the gender of your choosing, right? So individual school districts wouldn't be able to just say, no boys can compete in our athletics or against our girls or whatever it is. But what they did do at the school board meeting, and we'll get to more of it in a moment, is they voted to support two amendments that the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association is currently considering, both of which would essentially de facto ban biological boys from competing against girls. So this was sort of them saying, hey, and look, the timing is interesting. Frances's story has now gotten national attention. She and her mom were on Fox and Friends over the weekend, late last week, talking about it. And so then they have this school board meeting where the board decides, all the members but one, decide that they are going to take a stand and they're going to support these amendments that the WIAA is actively considering to change things and bring it more into alignment with what President Donald Trump's executive order is. So they didn't ban it. They couldn't ban it. But they're saying, we are going to support the WIAA if it moves to essentially ban boys from girls' sports. So as with anything on this topic, there's those of us who are reasonable. You know, there's reasonable parents, common sense people right, left, and center who are like, yeah, you know, we can't have boys competing against girls, who are saying it very respectfully. As the conversations on this show that we've had have been, including with Andy Rooks, the transgender athlete, who even said that we kind of had a point and President Trump kind of has a point when it comes to banning biological boys like Andy from participating in girls' sports. So there's those of us living in this place of reality where we can talk about these issues reasonably and rationally. And then there's the transgender activists that show up at meetings like this one.
Trans rights are human rights.
Yeah, and of course, if they can't get their way, they're just going to disrupt entire meetings and force the meetings to end early because they can't engage in any sort of civil conversation on the merits of the issue. They can't win these debates on the merits. So the far left does what the far left has always done, and they try to shout people down. They try to shut people up. They try to guilt people. They try to name call. I mean, what happened to Nicole and I when we were collecting signatures for a parental rights initiative? We probably, some of these same people, I guess if I looked at the crowd, I could probably pick out some of the same people. We were protested outside a coffee shop called transphobes for something that literally had nothing to do with transgender individuals whatsoever. It was about parental rights. So a few things from the speeches at this meeting. So one of the things that's interesting, there were not any speakers who spoke out in favor of defending girls. And we have talked to some people on background who really felt like this was the board president sort of behind the scenes, getting all of these trans activists prepared to come and speak so it looked like there was overwhelming opposition to banning boys, when in reality there clearly wasn't, because all of the members except the board president voted in favor of the WIAA amendments. But here's one of the speakers that showed up talking about, we can't do this because equity.
I don't think segregation is the solution to an equity problem around this. I know it's hard to teach at a time when bathrooms are blocked in Congress and now a basketball court in Tumwater High School for a young girl.
Young boy. For a young boy. So it's, again, you're talking about, you're comparing this to segregation, which is just the most insane thing ever, comparing it to segregation. And here's the board president. Again, the only member of the board who apparently wants biological boys to compete against girls.
I'm firmly opposed to this resolution because of the message it sends to our transgender students here in the Tumwater School District. Since 2016, I've advocated for students, staff, and families here in Tumwater School District and to have a space to be their authentic selves and to live the life that they were meant to live. Transgender students are a part of our district. I'm concerned that this resolution communicates that we do not see these students as an equal part of our community.
What says that? You're basically saying that they don't get special treatment, but because they aren't going to get special treatment, then that sends a message that they aren't an equal part of your community? It just shows just the unhinged nature of this belief process. Here's the vote. Again, very lopsided.
All those in favor of Resolution 092425, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. Nay.
I'm abstaining.
And then Joe was abstaining.
Oh.
All right. Motion carries.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's an example of how, like, social media isn't real life. Activists and activist voices aren't reflective of real life. So here you have this meeting where these trans activists pack the meeting. They're the only ones speaking. They're shouting so much so the meeting had to end early. And we're told that a school board member was spit on as they were escorted out. Like, police had to be called to this meeting. It's just so indicative of the far left. They showed up. They're not getting their way. They're yelling and screaming. The meeting has to be canceled early. The police get called. The police have to escort out the school board members. And one of the school board members who voted in favor of this resolution gets spit on. And, like, we're the ones who are hateful. We're the ones who are intolerant. Yeah, that sounds totally legitimate. But in the background of all of this, so I've been, you know, attacked online by the Tumwater Education Association, the teachers union. Don't care. Had fun with that. I was also attacked online while we were on break by the Thurston County Democratic Party. Don't care. Have fun with that. But I want to read part of their post to you. So this is the night of the meeting. So this meeting was on Thursday evening. So Thursday, 3:15 p.m., the Thurston County Democrats post this. Now, you've seen what the meeting was, right? Here's how what they posted before the meeting. Tonight, transphobic comments are expected at tonight's Tumwater School Board meeting. This is an opportunity to go and show your support for trans youth, especially trans athletes. Yeah, did you see any transphobic comments at that meeting? No, I saw a lot of trans activists acting absolutely foolish and allegedly spitting on people who don't agree with them. And then they go into the background of this whole. At a recent high school JV girls basketball game, two Tumwater girls sat out and refused to play because one of the players on the opposing team was transgender. After the game, one of the girls publicized the incident on social media. She and her mother were then interviewed by right-wing social media influencer Brandi Cruz. Oh my God, how could we? So somebody sent me that post and I was like, right-wing social media influencer Brandi Cruz here, and I'm happy to lead the resistance into this noble battle. And after that, they closed down comments and wouldn't let anyone who doesn't follow their page comment because, again, they weren't getting the responses that they wanted to get. There were people in the comments of the Thurston County Democrats saying, actually, have you listened or watched these interviews that Brandi did with the trans athlete and with Francis? You know, these are kids. I mean, these are teenagers, and they were very thoughtful and very measured in the way they discussed this issue. And then you have Thurston County Democrats, literal adults who cannot be measured, who have to name call and label and act completely unhinged and contribute to what happened at the meeting. Make no mistake, the Thurston County Democrats pointing that out and saying there's going to be transphobes and transphobic comments led to the left-wing activists going there, shouting people down, spitting on people, having the police called, etc., because they can't win on the merits of this argument. And they are a rabid animal backed into a corner, lashing out because they are so fearful about the end of radical gender ideology. Because what happens when it comes to an end? And this is very important and kind of the point of me talking about this again today. You know, when you see them lashing out, calling me a right wing, attacking me on social media, saying I'm leading to threats against teachers and against the district, and we have so far yet to see any legitimate evidence of any threats, even the threat that was reported to the Olympia Police Department in the police report isn't a threat at all. It's like, how would you like it if you had to play against biological boys and get hurt on the court or whatever it was? It was absolutely ridiculous. So they lash out, they name call, they label, they try to other and silence voices. Well, now the Thurston County or the Tumwater School District Board won't be silenced. Even in the face of the screaming and the shouting and the vilification, all but one said, yeah, we don't support boys and girls sports. And that's in Tumwater, pretty progressive area. And so you're starting to see the tide turn even in places like that. And so why are they so worried? Why are the Thurston County Democrats so worried that they're lashing out? Why is the Tumwater Education Association, the teachers union, so worried that it's lashing out? Why are these activists so worried that they're lashing out and spitting on people who they don't agree with? It's because if they don't have this, they have nothing. If they don't have this, they have nothing. If the Democratic Party doesn't have radical gender ideology, and the fear-mongering around it and the ability to push it as some sort of like social issue of our generation, then they have to defend their policies on the merits of actual substantial issues like crime, taxation, the homeless crisis, substance abuse, and they lose on all of those issues. The social issues, even like abortion and, you know, trans rights, these are the only things they have to cling to try to convince people and scare people into voting for them, because they make it out to be this issue that separates the hateful from the righteous, right? So if they lose their grasp on this issue, they start to lose their grasp on voters. And if they start to lose their grasp on voters, they start to lose their grasp on power. So that explains why Democrats are lashing out over this, right? So why are educators lashing out over this? Why do you have people like the president of the Tumwater Education Association who are lashing out against me for platforming someone like Frances Stout? Well, it's because test scores and every other thing that actually matters in academics is going really poorly. Test scores are in the toilet. Enrollment is down. Absenteeism is at an all-time high. And it's because, in part, of the pushing of these radical political and social indoctrination in schools, much of which we've documented on this show and in our documentary Operation Indoctrination. So if they can't push that, if they can't focus on that, then what does the focus then become? God forbid, the focus becomes on the focus is on academic outcomes and academic achievement. And they are failing in those important areas. So of course they want people focused on DEI. Of course they want people focused on radical gender ideology. Because if you're focusing on those things, then you're not focusing on their failures as educators and in the failures of our public school system. So that's why, so now we have, that's why Democrats are backed into a corner, right? And why they're lashing out. That's why educators feel backed into a corner and are lashing out. God forbid the funding that they'd lose if DEI goes down the drain and they can't continue to push these things. And then you have the trans activists. And look, the trans activists who we see at these events, who we see showing up to protest Nicole and I, or who we see showing up at school board meetings, these are activists who protest a number of other things. They're the same faces that are there to protest against Israel. They're the same faces that are there for Black Lives Matter protests. They're the same faces that were there for the Occupy movement. They're the same faces that are there for the tax Amazon, the rich are evil. Same faces that are there for the, you know, Trump derangement syndrome protests and the people who are at the Tesla dealerships protesting Elon Musk. They're always feeling backed into a corner because they're perpetual victims. And they feed off of being victims. They feed off of it. So they're always going to be there, no matter what. If radical gender ideology goes away tomorrow, they'll find another thing to show up at school board meetings and scream and yell about and act oppressed. If DEI goes away tomorrow, they'll find another thing to show up at school board meetings and act oppressed. It's because they, through and through, have a victim mentality, and they'll always have a victim mentality. And this is how they find meaning in their lives. This is how they make themselves feel righteous, like they're standing up for something. So to continue to factor into the equation the voices of a small vocal faction who have been yelling about whatever the far left issue of the day is for the better part of 20 years is not how we can continue to pursue policies and weigh policies in the state of Washington anymore. So as soon as we have regular people, right, left, and center, who are willing to say, okay, we are not going to acquiesce to the loudest voice in the room anymore, we'll let them move on to their next issue of the day, the sooner we can get back to sanity. So everyone feels Democrats backed into a corner lashing out. That's fine. Let them. Let them tucker themselves out. Washington Education Association, all the teachers' unions, backed into a corner lashing out. That's fine. Let them tucker themselves out. If they want to go after me, call me a right-wing social media influencer, accuse me of leading to threats against schools, let them do it. It doesn't bother me one bit, and I'm happy to be the backstop for all of that. Because once they exhaust all their screaming and shouting and hand-wringing and all of that, at the end of the day, people are still waking up. and the days of radical gender ideology, DEI, are coming to an end, and they will then have to stand on their merits, which, as we know, is a stack of papers about that high. So I'm not too worried about it. All right. Can we get to some good news? Shall we? A little bit of good news. So we have a bill that we've been pushing back against the entirety of the legislative session. It was on our list of the top 10 bad bills being circulated in Olympia. It is Senate Bill 5382. And as you know, this was dubbed the initiative killer by opponents, because that's the goal of it. Senate Bill 5382 is all about making the initiative process more difficult and more expensive by adding all of these burdensome requirements onto signature gatherers and onto the Secretary of State's office. However, it's dead. Oh, you love to see it. Now, anything can be resurrected from the grave in Olympia, but it didn't make it out of committee. It made it out of its initial committee, but it didn't make it out of the secondary committee. And so it does not appear that it's going to be advancing this session. And I will say, I give all the credit, not all the credit, I give a lot of credit to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, who, when it was in committee for a public hearing last week, showed up personally. And this is a Democrat-backed bill. A bill Democrats were pushing because they wanted to make initiatives which are run by conservatives more difficult, because they don't want anyone putting a check on their power. So I give a lot of credit to Steve Hobbs, a Democrat, for sitting in front of that committee and basically saying it's unconstitutional, it's completely unnecessary, and it will disenfranchise voters.
It doesn't matter if this bill passes, because the underlying constitution of the state of Washington says you just have to be a Washington voter. And so I would ask you not to move this bill forward. And if you are going to do the $1.2 million, I would love it if you put in my election security and civic engagement programs, because Governor Inslee's budget invalidated both those programs. Thank you. I'll take any questions that you might have.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of you who registered your opinion against that bill. I think you get a lot of credit as well. There's a lot of organizations that were out there, Let's Go Washington, speaking out against that bill and trying to inform the public about what it was really intended to do. But I don't know if it would be dead for the session if not for Steve Hobbs getting personally involved, because that takes the political nature out of it. That takes this idea that the opposition is just partisan out of it, because here you have a Democrat who, he is the man in charge of elections in this state. And when you have Democrats pushing it, saying, oh, this is about election integrity and just making sure that if you sign an initiative, you're actually a registered voter. And when he comes and pulls the rug out from underneath him and says, that's ridiculous, our system already does that, all you're going to do is disenfranchise voters, and you're going to get sued a bunch of times because it's unconstitutional and it costs us money at a time when we have no money. So I think him doing that absolutely put this bill down for the session. And the budgetary item, the budgetary aspect of it is big too. We're going to do a lengthy segment coming up in a moment about the budget issue. And when you have a $14 billion budget deficit and you have a very hyper-partisan bill that's intended to undercut the democratic process that has a cost, a price tag of $1.2 million to implement, that becomes sort of an easy out for Democrats who are thinking twice after Secretary of State Steve Hobbs spoke out against it. So this year's attack on the initiative process appears to be dead, but they're going to resurrect it probably next year. And if we continue to hand an even bigger majority over to Democrats, I've already told you, if they get a supermajority, they're just going to try to undo the initiative process entirely. That will happen. The first session where they have a supermajority in the House and Senate, they're going to try to push a constitutional amendment to get rid of the right to initiative. So the attacks on the initiative process aren't over. I'm just glad that we have someone like Steve Hobbs in our corner who sees reason, who sees through the partisanship, who actually wants to protect our process, and who's willing to speak out in a public way against what Democrats were very clearly trying to do. So that's a good, big win for us. I love it. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson wants to play the hero. He wants to play the hero. He's the guy going in there making the tough cuts to the budget. But if you read between the lines, what he's really doing is setting up his fellow Democrats to take the fall for new taxes. It's really quite ingenious, but remember, everything that man does is strategic, so I want you to see through it. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, he is having another one of his live Know Your Risk webinars coming up on March 20th at 3:30 p.m. This is going to be the first 100 days live webinar, so he's going to take a look at the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Obviously, there's a lot going on. It is impossible to keep up too much, but I'm sure that they'll do a good job of unpacking the first 100 days, talking about, you know, what's going on in the economy, how the rapid changes could impact your retirement portfolio. Then they'll do a little bit of a longer term outlook for 2025, 2026, and of course, a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So what do you say? Do you want to run your portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency? Well, you can do that with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, and it starts by signing up for Zach's first 100 days live webinar, Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can register. It's completely free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Nicole, you're smirking over there. Whenever you're smirking in the corner, I'm worried. Is something funny? Are comments particularly funny today? Are you just having a good day?
It's actually silly because I have to work on our show poll right now.
Oh.
And I couldn't see it because my card got declined.
Wait, so you're right now not a subscriber to Undivided?
Well, now I am. I just had to do it right there, like during that read.
Because you couldn't take the show poll because you're not a subscriber. Because
I couldn't take the poll and I couldn't even see the poll.
Don't you love it that I forced Nicole to be a paid subscriber to Undivided? You know, you'd think I'd give her a subscription for free.
So it's kind of silly.
No, it's only $5. Even you pay.
So I couldn't even see what you put
out. Oh, I was wondering why you were laughing over there.
It was silliness. And I was like, oh, she's probably seeing me out with a credit card thinking that I'm buying concert tickets
during the show. Nicole's over there shopping during the show while I'm over here trying to do the Lord's work.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I need your full attention for this next segment because we have a lot to discuss. She says deal. So Bob Ferguson has this big press conference Thursday of last week. Unfortunately, we didn't have a Thursday show, so we didn't cover it on the show. And he comes out and talks about all these budget cuts that his team has done the hard work of coming up with. But I think it's important to really read between the lines of that entire press conference and the questions asked by the media and the way that he answered the questions in the media. Because what you start to realize when you really think about it critically, and it's something I've warned about before, is that Bob Ferguson is setting himself up to be the hero, and he is throwing his fellow Democrats under the bus to take the heat when they eventually have to pass new taxes. Let's talk about it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter. They alert you to all sorts of good opportunities to get involved and do just that. Turn your frustration into action, which is what we want to see. Okay, so let's start with this because I've got to start. I'm going to give Bob Ferguson some credit. But again, I've always said Bob Ferguson is strategic, and I really need people to understand that. He is an incredibly intelligent person, and he's always strategizing based off of public opinion and public perception and the calculation of his next political move. So whenever I see anything Bob Ferguson does, I always run it through the mental calculations of what I know he's doing. So it's kind of like killing me a little inside to see some Republicans and conservatives and even budget fiscal minded Democrats fall for this so quickly, where they're like, wow, Bob Ferguson, I'm really impressed with this, because I want them to take a pause and understand the motivation behind all of it. So we'll get to it in a second. But first, the House Democrats, is there any entity more phony than them? Is there any entity more phony than the Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives? I don't think so. So they sent out this tweet. Oh my God. It says, "This week our members have shared stories about what's at risk if revenue isn't raised to help fill the $12 billion deficit. It includes cuts to healthcare, the social safety net, higher education, childcare, and more. But how did we get here?" To which I said, "The people who got us here are asking how we got here?" Literally, does anyone fall for this? This drives me nuts. You guys have been in power, complete trifecta, for much of the last 25 years. And you've had the governor's mansion for the last 40 years. So when you're sitting there wondering, how do we get here? Like, look in a mirror. That's how we got here. You guys cannot stop spending money. You couldn't realize that COVID one-time funds shouldn't be a continuing, shouldn't be given to things that would need to be a continuing cost. I mean, you could not say no to a program that your special interests wanted. Even in 2019, when the Democrats were saying, hey, stop spending money. This is going to get us in a bad situation. Let's save. You were like, spend, 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 spend. And now you're like, how did we get here? Just crazy. And of course, last week on the show, we had talked about this new website that they put out that they're pushing everyone to about how horrible these budget cuts would be. And they're saying, they listed all these reasons why we got into this situation. And they're saying it's because of, you know, inflation and increased needs, not at all because they spent more money than was coming in, like the basics of not being able to balance a budget. But they put out all these fear mongering, right? Oh my gosh, if we, they say catastrophic cuts to healthcare. Catastrophic cuts to higher education, long-term care, behavioral health, corrections, human services, and early learning. So they are trying to paint this as if we can't, they're trying to soften you up. If we cannot tax you more, the impact will be catastrophic to all of these things that make Washington, Washington, to all these not only progressive things, but to all of these absolutely necessary things like education and healthcare. So the Democrats push that out. And one of the one thing I'll give Bob Ferguson credit for is at his press conference about the budget, he basically said that Democrats who are claiming that these budget cuts will eliminate all these key issues are just full of it. Here he is.
We can save billions of dollars without touching core investments in K-12 education, in public safety, in homelessness, in housing services, and remain one of the most progressive states in terms of looking out for folks who are experiencing challenges. If the legislature adopts all of my recommendations, hypothetically, the following will still be true. A single parent in Washington working 40 hours a week and families in similar economic situations can access affordable child care subsidies that ensure they do not spend more than 7% of their household income on child care. They can pursue college or apprenticeships for free, thanks to the work of our legislature and decisions they made. They can apply for and receive $640 to cover additional costs of the working families tax credit. They can access food assistance programs such as EBT cards and food banks supported by our general fund. They can tap into economic assistance through TANF programs. They can receive free hospital care. They can receive free health care for their children through Medicaid. They can receive subsidized dental care and other health care services. These are just a few of the many examples of programs and policies that have been adopted to support Washington families during this tough economy.
So I love that because right after they push this out saying, we'll lose all this stuff, Bob Ferguson's like, no, we won't. So I give him a little bit of credit for that. And if I didn't know how his brain works, I would be a real big fan of what he's doing here. But there's a couple key things that were missing from this press conference he gave. So I want to play a couple things. First, here is, so he says his team has spent the last month and a half or so pouring through the budget, looking for line items to cut. And this was the first press conference really showing the fruits of that labor, right? How many line items have they been able to come up with for him to present to the legislature as possible cuts? So here's the brass tacks of it.
After this initial review of the past several weeks, I'm recommending approximately $4 billion in savings to the state budget. The precise number is $3,926,404,000. These savings are in addition to Governor Inslee's proposal, which reduced the shortfall by an additional $3 billion. Combined, these proposals reduce the projected $15 billion budget shortfall by $7 billion.
Okay, great. But carry the two, five, seven, 5 billion, 15 billion, 7, you still have 8 billion left, right? So this is the thing that over and over in that press conference, he refused to address. Even the legacy media, which I'm very hard on in the room, was sort of also doing the math. Like, okay, $15 billion, you've got 7 billion. Don't we still have 8 billion left? So doesn't that mean that there are going to have to be new taxes in order to balance the budget, which you must do. So three or four times Reporters in the room tried to ask him that very obvious question, and he dodged it every single time.
But after going through this exercise anyway, are you now leaning more in the direction that you might have to sign off on some tax increases, and what would they look like?
I'd say it's too soon to say right now, Jim.
Our tax, regardless of what type of tax, is just the basic math indicate that some sort of taxes are inevitable.
Look, I'm new to being governor, but I'm not new to the legislature, right? Last time I checked, you know, we've still got 2 months to go in this legislative session. I need to sit down and have a conversation with legislative leaders. What are they finding out? I know they're doing their own work, which is not insignificant. They're leaning into it as well. So I'm just, look, at some point, I'll have a better answer to that question, but I just don't think that's right now.
At what point? He knows the answer. I said this a month and a half ago after his inaugural address when he came out. You can go find the receipts on my X. I'm not going to go look it up right now. I should have looked it up for the show. Where I said, look, you can celebrate this, but see what he's doing. He is buttering you all up to make you believe that he exhausted every single effort to cut the budget, and then he's going to have to come back and say, it's not my fault. They put us in such a big hole. We have no choice, and here are the taxes that Democrats passed. He is setting up his own party to be the bearers of bad news. He doesn't even want to talk or mention or answer questions about the very real likelihood that to compensate for the other $8 billion that Democrats put us in the hole, they're going to have to raise revenue, new taxes or increased taxes. He knows that. The math isn't mathing. But he doesn't want to be the one to say it. He'll sign them. He'll sign them into law. He'll sign the budget that has them. But he wants to put as much distance between himself and newer increased taxes as humanly possible. So he's setting up Democrats in the House and Senate to be the ones to do that. And he's going to act like it was completely out of his control and out of his hands. Now, part of that might be fair. You could say, well, yeah, he did basically have to adopt this budget crisis that Governor Inslee left us. But that also would be letting him off the hook. Bob Ferguson, as Attorney General for 12 years, doubled the size of his office. He was one of those Democrats that kept spending and spending and spending when Republicans are saying, stop spending, let's save. He wasn't in there saying, hey, we need to find some cost. He wasn't budget conscious. He wasn't saying we need to find some cost-saving efforts just in case after the pandemic things aren't shaping up or inflation is bad or whatever it is. We can't keep spending this COVID money and asking the general fund to compensate. He knew it and he said nothing and he did nothing. So his hands aren't clean in this. But I kind of love this because it's going to be Democrats versus Democrats. And you know that Democratic leadership in the House and Senate sees exactly what Bob Ferguson is doing. There, he's going to make them be the ones to push new taxes. And he can just sit pretty and say, oh, look at all the cuts I brought to the table. Look at all the cuts I brought to bear. Oh, I didn't replace the carpet in my office for $70,000. So he's setting himself up to be the hero, and he's setting them up as the patsies. And I love it, because it's going to cause a rift in the Democratic Party where someone is going to have to, of his own party, call him out for that. So it won't be me, it won't be the right-wing social media influencer or whatever they want to call me on any given day. Either they're going to have to take 100% of the heat for it, or they're going to have to call Bob Ferguson out for what he is very clearly doing. I'll also note some other inconsistencies here in the way that he's going through this. And again, I think this is the only show that you're going to get this level of context. You can look at the entirety of what he says and see through, read through the lines. Is that what it is? I really suck at metaphors. It is not a strength of mine. So, for instance, one of the things he said, read between the lines. Oh, you didn't even get it right. Read between the lines. He says, I had my team do 4 main things to look at where we could find cuts. And one of them was to look at, as we've discussed on this show, money that was intended to be one-time COVID spending that has all of a sudden become permanent spending.
During COVID, we received significant one-time funding from the federal government for various programs. These one-time dollars are essentially gone. In some circumstances, the state has backfilled those one-time dollars with ongoing general fund resources. And I understand why. Those are good programs. I took a very close look at whether the state could take on those obligations for those federal dollars that were meant as a one-time investment during COVID.
Oh my God, that's great. I love that, right? We've talked about that. That's just such a basic budget thing. If you're getting one-time money, the example I gave on the show the other day is if you get a Christmas bonus that's pretty big, you don't go out and buy a mansion that you can't afford the monthly mortgage on, but that one time. And then you got to find the money for the monthly mortgage somewhere else in months that you're not getting a bonus. So that was what our state was doing. It's like, oh, we got all this influx of money. So let's give it to programs that we're then going to have to continue to fund every single year. And we'll just figure out later on where the money's going to come from. So from a budgetary perspective and a fiscal responsibility perspective, what he says there is very smart. And it's very timely. Because what did we talk about on the show exclusively last week? We talked about how the Washington Education Association was gifted $10 million in one-time COVID funds to come up with an educator training apprenticeship program, essentially. And then 2 years ago, OSPI said, hey, let's expand that and now fund it with our taxpayer money for $21 million. And then this budget cycle, right now in the midst of a budget crisis, how much is OSPI asking for to expand what was a program funded with one-time COVID funds? They want $70 million for it now. So this is a glaring, I mean, that's a huge example. We're not just talking about, oh, little COVID funds here that turned into some spending. You're talking about $10 million in one-time COVID funds. That's now a $70 million ask to pad the pockets of the Washington Education Association for a program that has only graduated 12 participants. So if Bob Ferguson is serious, where he says for the last month and a half, 2 months, his team has been looking at these very issues with one-time COVID spending that has since ballooned, then surely this spending from the WEA is something that they've looked at, right? He was asked about it.
Governor, you mentioned one-time funding for COVID-era programs.
Yeah.
So the WEA started getting funding for a COVID program to train substitutes. Now OSPI is requesting around $70 million to continue that program. I'm wondering if your office has looked into this program to make sure it's still needed and legitimate.
I'm pausing only because I don't. Yeah.
As part of this exercise, we did not look at K-12 spending or reductions. So it may have been something that was considered during the development of Governor Inslee's budget, but we'd have to get back to you on that specific point.
Oh, well, isn't that convenient? Oh, we're looking hard at COVID spending, one-time COVID funds that ballooned, but not that $70 million line item. Why? Well, because it's going to the Washington Education Association, which, of course, is one of the biggest backers of Democratic political candidates and Democratic political causes, as we've discussed on the show, including Bob Ferguson. So, of course, when they look at, and he wants us to take him seriously, that he's looking at all this one-time COVID spending and how it's ballooned, well, yeah, but not the spending that's padding the pockets of our biggest political donors. Of course not that. So I can't take him seriously on that issue. If he says that they are really serious about not continuing one-time COVID spending, unless absolutely necessary, this is a massive $70 million line item. And they're saying, well, we didn't look at that as part of this exercise. Well, I can't really take you seriously then. There's one more aspect I want to dive into that, again, I can't take him seriously. And you always have to remember how his brain works. He's a grandmaster chess player. He's playing chess and we are all his pawns unless we refuse to be his pawns. So here is one thing he talked about. He went through just a couple of the cuts and the cost saving. He didn't dive into all of them during the presser, but one of the ones he made sure to mention is potential cuts to the Special Commitment Center for Violent Sex Predators on McNeil Island.
Because of the declining populations at the Special Commitment Center, we're able to close the 24-bed Dogwood unit and consolidate into the remaining units at the Special Commitment Center. That saves nearly $4 million.
Well, that's great. But it's only great if you don't know the background that Bob Ferguson, as Attorney General, is the reason why so many of these sex predators are no longer being housed on McNeil Island. The Seattle Times did this big expose during the governor's race. It was titled, "Law Confined Hundreds for Sexual Violence, Then It Quietly Began Releasing Them." And what that Seattle Times article didn't mention at the time is that it was Bob Ferguson. They never even mentioned him by name, that this was his responsibility. The Attorney General's office is responsible for keeping violent sex predators on McNeil Island. And for years and years, they were maybe releasing one a year, maybe two. Under Bob Ferguson, they started releasing dozens and dozens every single year. So Bob Ferguson and sending them into communities, into these less restrictive alternatives, without informing communities at all that there was going to be a sex predator 50 yards down from the bus stop where their kids wait for school. So Bob Ferguson spends 12 years, the media giving him cover, to release the worst of the worst sex offenders into our communities, and now he gets to stand up as governor and brag that he gets to save tens of millions of dollars by closing a section of housing on the Special Commitment Center. Well, the only reason you can do that is because you have stopped standing in the way of the release of these violent predators into our communities. So I'm not really sure that that's an element of budget savings that people want or that you can really take credit for in terms of it being some like magical savings to our wallet. He makes it sound like there's less sexually violent predators. Like, oh, we just don't need it anymore. It's like, yeah, because you let all the violent sex offenders go into our communities. Isn't that convenient? It's just wild stuff. So reading between the lines, mark my word, the math isn't mathing. $15 billion, $7 billion in cuts, there's still $8 billion. So new taxes are coming. Increased taxes are coming. But Bob Ferguson doesn't want you to blame him. So he's going to do everything he can to get out in front of that narrative. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can be alerted to opportunities to get involved, push back against bad bills, bad policy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. We all need insurance. Why not have someone who can help you make sure for free that you have the best insurance, the coverage you need, at the best possible price? We've had so many undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge. Margo on YouTube says, I just took the First Mark Challenge and found out that mine is good. They're so nice and suggested increasing the deductible on my current house insurance to save a little money. So they gave her advice to save money, but still turned her business away because she was doing just fine on her own. She had good insurance at a good price. So First Mark's like, we're not going to meddle in it, but here's a little tip to help you save a little money, but you don't need First Mark. So I love hearing those stories because I think that's the real judge of an honest business. If you come to them and you've got great insurance and you did a great job finding it on your own, they don't need to get involved in it. All they're concerned about is that you have the best insurance at the best price and that your family is covered and cared for. So I love that about First Mark. But on the flip side, we have heard a lot of stories of viewers and listeners who saved thousands of dollars when they went to First Mark Insurance to do the First Mark Challenge. Eric says that they're saving him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy, which is just crazy. So he now says he tells everyone he knows who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. He said, I did, and I'm truly richer for it. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, speaking of the whole budget thing that Bob Ferguson had and, you know, pulling the wool over people's eyes, one of the reasons why he's successful in doing that, in convincing people that he is someone he's not, is because the media not only lets him get away with it, but they help prop up this fake version of himself that he's putting forward. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so let's go to our friends at the Seattle Times, shall we? Bob Ferguson's little buddies over at the Seattle Times, and they just love this. So the Seattle Times baffles me. It's like the editorial board will act like they want fiscal responsibility, but when Democrats aren't fiscally responsible, they'll let them off the hook with it. They'll even turn around and continue to endorse their campaign. So they're just all over the place. But when it comes to Bob Ferguson coming out and putting down these potential budget cuts, they are just the biggest fans now, again, of fiscal responsibility. This from the Times, it's an editorial. Ferguson injects much needed frugality. I hate that word. Frugality. I mean, frugality. But is it frugality? Frugality? I don't know.
I never really thought Ferguson about it. Ferguson injects really
much needed frugality into Democrats' budget process. Terrible word. Hated in a headline. So now they're just, oh, celebrating. He's just the best. This is from the editorial board. Let's see what they had to say about Bob Ferguson's great budget prowess, shall we? Democratic legislative leaders continue to insist taxes are necessary to cover a budget gap of their own making with excessive spending. Ferguson has been steadfast in navigating the situation, first with frugality and prudence, a demonstration of leadership. And it's like, okay, but he also knows taxes are going to be necessary. He's just hiding it. So they're fooled by that. Ferguson included axing the projected $23 million in cost to try to set up former Governor Jay Inslee's legally questionable attempt to tax assets of the wealthiest Washingtonians. That shows the new governor is grounded in reality. Ferguson and his team uncovered ways that, as he points out, are reductions we should be making, even if we are not facing a budget shortfall. He pointed out specific examples, including a pandemic-era warehouse the state would have paid $4.4 million for over the next 4 years. The governor could simply have relied upon outgoing Inslee's proposals, but the legislature's job, after all, to craft the state, it is the legislature's job, after all, to craft the state's budget. But in his budget work, he is responsibly managing state agencies and setting the tone for what his expectations are from lawmakers. He wisely canceled his trip to join other governors from around the country at a White House gathering this month so he could spend more time on the budget. They are just the biggest fans of this guy and his frugality. Frugality. Somebody's going to give me the correct pronunciation. It's fine. I don't talk for a living or anything. Now let's see how they're characterizing Donald Trump and Elon Musk's efforts to cut spending at the federal level, shall we? In the same article, what a different image this is from the draconian cuts President Donald Trump and a chainsaw-wielding Elon Musk are making as they continue hacking up the federal government. Rather, Ferguson is showing fiscal discipline in proposing surgical and concise cuts that impact services for Washingtonians as little as possible. Like, they would never be able to bring themselves, even knowing the amount of waste, fraud, and abuse at the federal level, even knowing the state of our deficit at the federal level, even knowing the necessity of cutting back on wasteful spending at the federal level, they would never, ever give Donald Trump or Elon Musk an ounce of credit for even trying to engage in that task. That's draconian, and he's chainsaw wielding, and it's hacking up the federal government. But Bob Ferguson, his cuts are surgical, concise, responsible, going to affect people as little as possible. And it just shows, like, they don't care about actual budget consciousness, good governance. They only see red and blue. And if it's blue, it's good. If it's red, it's bad. And that goes for so many other things. You just look at it. Again, political violence. Blue? Totally good. Love it. Political violence is awesome. Let's make excuses for Chaz Chop and violence against the police, etc., because it's done for a noble cause. Political violence on the right? January 6th? Like, even the Seattle Times. The Seattle Times has written more articles about January 6th as a state newspaper than it has about the left-wing political violence that happened 6 months before January 6th in Washington State. So that is what they put everything through the lens of. If it's blue and it happens, it's great. If it's the right doing it, very bad, evil, draconian, fascist, Nazi, whatever it is. It's so transparent. Unbelievable. Okay, let's get to some national news quick. I just want to talk about the Trump-Zelensky drama a little bit. Do you have a cut of Trump and Zelensky?
I do have a cut.
Okay, let's just, I'm sure you've seen it by now, but go ahead.
Start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems. Even you, but you have nice ocean. And don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future. God bless.
You don't know that.
God bless. God bless. You will not have a war.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that. Remember this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
You will feel influence.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influence.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and he happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having cards.
Playing cards.
Right now, you don't. You're playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country, that's backed you far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once?
Have you said thank you once, J.D. Vance? So, okay, I don't know what's going on in the mind of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. The media coverage of this, as normal, was just completely partisan and unhinged. I also think that it's not fair to talk about that without the context of the 40 minutes before that. They were having a perfectly pleasant, respectful conversation. So people who were saying that it was like they had this planned the entire time, they were going to jump down his throat, so they waited 40 minutes or so to do it, I guess I don't really buy that. I'm sure behind the scenes they had some sort of conversation about, you know, if we need to get harsh in front of the news cameras, we will do that and we will send a message, because you could tell that JD and Vice President Vance and President Trump were sort of playing off each other in that moment. So I'm sure there's a little bit of truth on both sides of that. I'm also sure that conversations like that happen behind the scenes with world leaders all the time. But of course, it happening publicly like that, given the circumstances, is a little bit jarring and unusual. But here's the thing. Like, you noticed right after that, right? Mm-hmm. All the European leaders got together, you know, America wasn't invited, all the European leaders, and they're standing around, they're all tweeting out, we are working toward a solution for enduring peace. And it's like, you guys don't see how that is a positive outcome of what Donald Trump and J.D. Vance did?
Right.
Like, that is a direct result. You guys being reinvigorated to work on a solution toward peace. You actually don't see how what Trump and Vance did in that meeting, in front of cameras, helped all of a sudden light a fire under everyone's asses to, like, let's put an end to the bloodshed, right, and find a peaceful resolution?
The outrage,
it's
over
amazing.
It just because, I mean, that was embarrassing. It was embarrassing for Americans.
I was proud.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all embarrassing, especially if you know that, I mean, it would be a World War III. If we let them into NATO and we had to go to war because we have to defend our NATO partners, then it would be a World War III, yeah, and nobody wants that. And it's just crazy to me to see the backlash of people saying, oh, well, that's embarrassing. We need to support him at all costs, and we need to, you know, as in let them into NATO and go to war.
Yeah.
Like, do you really want us to be going to war at this point? And I just think it's wild, the way that people just automatically go, oh, Trump's embarrassing, like that was uncalled for, and this guy is a hero. And I don't know Zelensky. I don't know that, but I know.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
You did. Okay.
But I do know that everything is very strategic, and Biden got very frustrated with him multiple times as well.
That is something they weren't talking about.
Nope, not that, and except for later, the right wing outlets pointed out that Biden was very upset with him.
And for what? Because he wasn't being as grateful as Biden thought he ought to be for the aid. So Biden was frustrated with him for the same reason that Trump was frustrated with him. They just said it to his face out loud in a very forceful manner. And I would also say, you remember one of the last meetings, it might have been the very last meeting Biden had with Zelensky? That was the one Biden was like falling asleep at.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is more detrimental to peace and security in the country? Our president essentially falling asleep at a meeting with a world leader in front of cameras? Or our president and vice president being very forceful that they want peace, and they also want to make sure that this isn't a blank check to Ukraine.
Right.
It's so partisan. It's
identifying
crazy.
Immediately what Zelensky was doing in that moment.
Yep.
Identifying it. They had a plan. They were obviously very, they went into that meeting ready for whatever Zelensky was going to throw at them to surprise them in whatever respect. They weren't going to just react and then say later, oh, now I know what he was doing. They knew what he was going to do.
Right. And they were clearly ready for him. That's what I say about, of course they were. It wasn't about, and again, I'm not in their minds. If you watched it all in its entirety, ambush is the most ridiculous word to describe that. It was a perfectly pleasant meeting up to that point. But you could tell that they knew that if he were to sort of push, cross some boundaries, that they would very aggressively put him in his place. And that's what they did. We're talking about the president of a tiny little place that we've been giving so much money to, who in their eyes and in Biden's eyes was not grateful enough for the help of the United States, wasn't moving quickly enough toward a reasonable, peaceful solution.
Right.
Like, we're not going back to 2014 boundaries. That's not going to happen here. There's a lot of things that they want, that if you're going to continue to be in that conflict until you get everything you want, then that conflict will never end until every fighting age man has died in Ukraine. So it's just the most insane thing. Do I think Trump's perfect? No. Do I think there's a lot of times that he does and says things in front of the cameras that are probably not great for the country? Sure. I really don't think this is one of them.
You,
I was so like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
you tell him.
I mean, if you don't give him credit for anything else, you could give him credit for, during the first term, it being one of the only presidents that actually, like, had world peace at some point during his presidency.
But the thing is, he's not responsible for us And they want to act like, well, he's buddying up to Putin. No, he knows, like, he knows what kind of man mm-hmm. Putin is. And because of that, he knows that there is an element of not cozying up to him, but not nope. alienating him. Not, like, if you try to outpower so or try to play something like that mm-hmm. with Putin, like, Putin's not going to take that in the same way. And so it's just this, like, strategic way of dealing with personalities that I think Trump is very good at.
Very good at, like, and nobody will give him credit for that. It's like, it is wild. Like, oh, that bad.
Too much. It's like when he is really aggressive with certain handshakes and, like, overpowers them and, like, pulls them in. You don't think he knows what
that's
he's doing?
Genius.
He, of course, knows. He's not going to do that to
not
everyone.
Letting go.
He doesn't do that to everyone. But there are some where it's like he's growing and he's pulling them in. It's totally, it is a power move. It's a business move.
Yep.
And so it's just people are like, oh, this has changed world politics forever. And now America's aligned with Russia. It's like, you guys watch how fast they find peace.
Yep.
Watch how fast they reach a peace deal. And they'll say, oh, this is because of our European allies. No, it's because without America, you knew you were going to be royally effed.
Yep.
And so that lit a fire under everyone. Because Europe can't maintain, they're not going to give you the money to maintain and compensate. Mm-hmm. So they have more of a motivation than ever to stop the war in Ukraine. And so, and then people won't give Trump credit for the fact that what he did in the Oval Office is going to lead to that. So anyway, but we know. We know the truth.
It's very entertaining to watch at this point, because I do trust that this is going to move in the right direction based on the way that it's going.
Right.
If he had gone there and it was all like hunky-dory and like, I'll just give you more money, we'll just keep right. supporting, that would have concerned me.
Well, and then he says, it's going to come to your, you have a nice little ocean, but it's going to come to your shores. And Trump's like, it kind of comes across as a threat. I know he mm-hmm. didn't mean it that way. I know he meant it as like, if we don't stop Russia, then, you know, Russia will continue to do this in other places. But what he fails to recognize is, yeah, but we're America. We can protect ourselves mm-hmm. without assistance. You can't. So, like, don't tell us that we can't. He's essentially saying if we don't stop Russia and Ukraine, America can't stop Russia. Right. Yeah, we can. You know, we'll be fine. So it's just wild. So I was in Boston over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you guys, I should have pulled some video. If you're ever in Boston, you know, I love America. Just, and I was in D.C. a couple weekends ago and just saw all the fun, patriotic, cool stuff. And it really just, you know, just you love your country. If you're ever in Boston, there is a little museum on the site of the Boston Tea Party,
mm-hmm.
and you can pay for a little reenactment. It was so much fun. You know I love.
Oh,
I love.
That sounds fun.
It was so much fun, and it was so cool. They've got people dressed up in character, and they reenact the meeting that they're having about what to do about the tea on the ships, and they give you speaking roles. I had a little speaking role.
So
you
wait,
can
they
stand
do
up
this
and shout. And
over and over all day, are you...
They do a couple.
Be a part of it, one of them.
No, like, they do a couple a tours a day, and it lasts
that's
like
so
an
fun.
Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bring you in, and you've got the meeting, and you're all in these like booths in this meeting room, and they're playing it out like they're going through the, are we going to destroy this tea?
Right.
Like, you know, and they're, oh my God, the speeches are just so great, and you get to stand up and shout, and like,
I love
it was
that.
So cool. And then you get to go down to the little boat, and you get to throw tea crates in the water. And I was like, yeah. I was like putting all of my energy and enthusiasm into it. And then they take you in and they give you, you can't film it, but this really cool historical sort of perspective on everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. It's like $35. If you're ever in Boston, totally do it. I had the best time. My friend Johnny, who was with me, is like, you're really enjoying this. I just saw this big smile on my face. It just really makes you understand the history and the significance
yes.
of the moment or whatever it is. But I bring up Boston because mm-hmm. also while I was in Boston, there was a crazy stabber at a Chick-fil-A. So I felt pretty safe in Boston. I'm not going to lie. I know they have some crime issues and I didn't venture too far outside of the main core of the city or whatever. But so this happened in Boston while I was there. Off-duty Boston police officer kills knife-wielding suspect inside Copley Square restaurant. So it was a guy who was had a knife in a Chick-fil-A restaurant going on a little, you know, crazy stabby stab. And this, the mayor of Boston comes out after this and has this to say about it.
My condolences and all of our thoughts are with the family of the individual whose life has been lost.
The individual whose life was lost was the crazy stabber. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
She was like being eviscerated online for it. Our condolences to the individual whose life... You mean the guy who was in the Chick-fil-A waving around a knife at people?
Uh-huh. She seemed very unprepared.
Oh my gosh, it was so weird. So he was shot by the off-duty officer, was taken to the hospital, died there. Like, you know, we don't want anyone to die. But why is the mayor out there giving a sad sack press conference condolences to the guy who died and his family?
Why not just say thank you to the officer?
Right.
Who
thank
saved
you to the officer
lives,
who saved. Likely. Mm-hmm. God forbid. Mm-hmm. Thank you to the brave actions of this officer who was off duty, who stepped in and saved lives. No, we're so sorry this happened. This is a tragedy. Just insane. So I wanted to let you know I was not in the Chick-fil-A at the time. Never been in a Chick-fil-A, but I was not in that Chick-fil-A. I've never gone to Chick-fil-A. In what world do you think I have time to sit in that drive-thru line? I don't have time for that.
It's
every time,
like
it's around
that.
The block. And plus, I'm not eating Chick-fil-A. I'm trying to be svelte.
I have grilled.
Okay. Anyway, so just insane. So even though I was in Boston, I didn't see a lot of crime issues. Boston is still as woke as elsewhere. Okay, should we get to this detransitioner? Let's do it. So in Montana, I love this because it's not going to get any mainstream media attention. And these are the sort of clips that I think we need to play on independent media because there is just not, for all of the hand-wringing and attention focused on people who are transgender and on this debate over should transgender kids be able to get surgeries or hormones, The mainstream media still refuses to platform detransitioners, which is so crazy to me. So it's like you platform trans people who are, you know, screaming that transgender, human rights, we want to be able to have these surgeries and this is all great, but you won't platform for some reason. Have you ever found this bizarre? They will not platform detransitioners. And I have such a hard time understanding that. And there was this great L. Palmer who testified, so it says she...
Tweeted.
I went home this weekend to testify on a bill that aims to extend the statute of limitations for harms from gender transition in Montana. I transitioned a decade ago at a Planned Parenthood of Montana, and lawyers weren't touching detransition cases when I realized the harm that it had done to me as a minor almost 6 years ago. So she's basically supporting this bill that would allow longer statute of limitations if you detransition and you now want to sue over the harm caused to you as a minor because you got this transition surgery. So here's part of Elle's testimony.
I was born and raised in Great Falls. 10 years ago, when I was 15, I came out to my parents as a transgender boy. 1 year later, I was prescribed testosterone at the Great Falls Planned Parenthood. I was 16. I was a child, and yet I was allowed to permanently damage my body with male hormones for 3 years. I detransitioned before I had even hit my 20s. But before I had heard the word transgender, I had already been struggling with puberty. By age 13, I had been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder. By age 14, I'd been sent to Chaudière, the Children's Mental Hospital here in Helena, 3 separate times. So when I found out that I could leave that mentally ill girl behind and take a life-saving medication called testosterone, I was convinced that being trans was the source of all my problems. When I was 16, my parents took me to Planned Parenthood. They tried to come into the doctor's office, but when they followed behind me, the nurse stopped them and asked if I wanted them in the room. I said no. The doctor explained all the side effects of testosterone that I already knew. I smiled and said I was ready for my first shot. My parents were brought back in, and they were essentially told that I had made the choice. Their only role was to sign the paperwork. I took testosterone for 3 years. When I was 16, my voice dropped to a baritone range. When I was 17, I started losing hair. When I was 18, I started my application for the University of Montana. I had to apply for a dorm room. I knew I wasn't male and didn't want to live with a man, but I couldn't possibly fit into a female dorm room with a beard, chest hair, and a baritone voice. I felt like I didn't fit in as a man or as a woman. So when I was 19 in my first week of college, I detransitioned. Of course, I ignored the risks. I was 16 and invincible. Even if I had known testosterone would give me prediabetes, high blood pressure, early onset osteoporosis, and even an increased risk of sterility, I wouldn't have said no. In my mind, there was no other option. Kids are not able to fully understand the life-changing consequences of hormones. I was unable to see into the future, but I shouldn't have been expected to in the first place. Just because kids insist that they will never change their mind doesn't mean it will never happen. These These hormones will have lifelong effects on their bodies, their minds, their future romantic relationships, and their social belonging. Please pass House Bill 682 so the kids like me who didn't understand the life sentence they signed up for will be able to get justice. Thank you.
It is a crime that the media robs the public of stories like that one. It's a crime. And you know, for a long time, you know, even when I was in Legacy News, covering anything around transgender issues was a no-no. It was just too touchy. It was like, how do you cover it? And you get the things. We just didn't cover it. But now the media, you know, for the last few years has been all in on the pro-trans, like pro-trans surgeries for youth and all of this. And Trump is anti-trans and all of this. And, you know, trans kids, if you don't let them do this, they're going to kill themselves. So the media has been all in on that narrative, but will not platform detransitioners. The only real place, there's been a couple places, but mostly on X, where L's story has been shared. And how powerful is that? And if you're a parent, we've talked about this on the show, what other circumstance do you not want two sides when you're dealing with a medical issue, right? As a parent, if your kid's dealing with a medical issue, let's say they've got cancer. Don't you want to know if you're going to take a drug or go a course of treatment like chemotherapy, what the side effects what might be? What are the positives and what are the negatives? You do that for everything. But with childhood transitions, we don't want to look at what the bad could be, what could happen. We don't want to hear from people who have actually been through it. I mean, listen to her voice. Her voice will always be like that. Her entire life, because of what was allowed to happen to her as a child. It really is criminal that the media will not take a closer look at the stories of detransitioners and continues to parrot these debunked talking points about, oh, if you don't let trans kids do this, they'll kill themselves and all this stuff. It's insane what the media has choose to cover on the transgender issue. And the media is as much to blame as the politicians who have pushed these policies. Okay, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. The spring real estate market is absolutely heating up, and this is one of the best times of the year to list your home. And if you've been thinking, you know, is the real estate market slow, it's definitely going to be in a better position than it was in 2024. But the real issue is low inventory. It's not low buyer demand. There's still a ton of demand out there. So homes that do hit the market right now are selling quickly, and listings that are priced right and that have been properly prepared for the market are obviously performing the best. And that's what Wes Jones and his team can help you out with. Wes has been doing this for a long time in our area. He's been through the market's ups and downs. So he's going to start by giving you a free market analysis. So you have you set your expectations about how your home can perform, how homes in your neighborhood have been performing. And then he's going to talk to you about whether any sort of cosmetic upgrades or anything needs to be done to your home to make sure you get the best possible price. He can help manage those projects, take all the stress off of it for you. He can even help you pay for those projects up front, which I think is a pretty cool service. It's called their Listing Boost Concierge Service. So he says March, May, top months of the year to list a home. And he does expect that 2025 is shaping up to be a strong year for real estate. So if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is just a better way to sell your home. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? But first, I want to play you another cut from Bob Ferguson's press conference about the budget. So one of the ways that he's looking to save money is mandatory furlough days for state workers. So I'll just let him explain it.
Given our budget situation, however, I am proposing more than $300 million in savings by requiring most state employees to take a furlough day, one day a month, for the next 2 years.
Yeah, so one unpaid day every month for the next 2 years for most state employees. Obviously, there would be some state employees who would be exempt from that, like state troopers, for instance. He's not going to pull them off the road. They're already short-staffed. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll whether you support the idea of those furloughs, if it's something that they make good on. 61% saying yes, 39% saying no. Brenda says, I voted no because I don't think critical service employees should be cut back. And also cutting state employees' days back could turn into a permanent thing. Susan also voted no. A percentage of state employees continue to work from home. Call them back in. Perhaps it would increase their productivity and many would quit. So you, instead of furloughs, just do the whole, like, what Amazon did is come back to the office. And like 25% say no. So you can just do layoffs without actually having to be the bad guy. So
I would support, except for traffic.
Yes.
It creates more.
Tia, I'd like to see layoffs and smaller government first. Pat, no, because Inslee got us in the red. Ferguson calculates his moves on his personal chance to get on that is personal gain. Employees don't hold responsibility for that. Trim the fat and waste at the top. Quit wasting taxpayer money. Hold the Democrats responsible. Heidi says all this does is making government work part-time with full-time wages. Sandra, if reductions are needed, then layoffs are needed, not a 20% reduction in everyone's hours. I've been through that and the hours slowly creep back up, no time at all. And that's the question is, you know, do you just, I know they're making some cuts via attrition. You know, you're not firing people, but if someone quits or retires and you don't need to fill that position, maybe you don't fill that position. I actually think that's a really good way to reduce the size of government. But one of the things that I couldn't help but sort of notice. So during this press conference, Bob Ferguson was asked about a Republican-backed bill that would save $19 million by eliminating a completely unnecessary office, the Office of Equity. We talked about this on the show last week. Here's what Bob Ferguson said about that bill.
Had a whole press conference here 2 weeks ago about the subject of Donald Trump and DEI, and I think I covered it pretty thoroughly there. We've got our values. We're going to stick with our values, and that's part of what this has been, and that as well. So, yeah, that won't happen.
Yeah, that won't happen. So that's what I heard from a lot of state workers. It's like, so you're going to make us furlough one day a month for 2 years, but you're completely willing to keep the Office of Equity, which is entirely unnecessary. It's just a DEI office, and it says it's about making sure that state government is equitable across all the agencies. Why aren't the agencies responsible for making sure that they're equitable if you really care about equity and not equality or whatever it is? It's that's totally redundant. It's just an office to make them feel good, but he's willing to spend $19 million on it a year, and that's completely off limits. But we're going to make state employees stay home one day every month for the next 2 years to try to fix the problem that we created. Let me see. Diane says she's not in favor of it unless Bob and all the other representatives give up the pay raise they voted for themselves. That is the peak of hypocrisy to harm state workers, but give leadership a 14% raise. And that is the other point. So they just are they're passing pay raises for themselves. Okay. Pay raises for themselves during a budget crisis they created that they're going to try to fill with new taxes. But they also want state employees to take one furlough day every month for 2 years. Hypocrisy through the roof. Bob Ferguson, how about you take a furlough day every single day for the next 4 years? Well, I think the state would be better off. Let me see. Matthew Cook says it doesn't address the true issue of wasteful spending and affects essential services. Ferguson doubled down on his support of DEI, so he's not serious about cuts. And to that, I agree. And I think we detailed quite well why he's not actually serious about cuts. Okay, we have the best sanity check for today. ever, but I want to get to some comments first. Tyler, 499 Super Chat. Brandy, love your show. Thank you. My second grade Snohomish School District child came home on Friday telling me about pronouns, and her teacher taught to be respectful to others, you should use their preferred pronoun. I have not contacted the school yet, but I'm very concerned. Contact the school. Why are you talking to second graders about preferred pronouns when these kids are still learning to speak properly and read and grammar? You're going to confuse the hell out of them with people's preferred pronouns. Absolutely, Tyler, talk to the school. Baron of Gray Matter, sorry, fence sitting will get us nowhere. Am I fence sitting? Are you saying I'm fence sitting? Next bill that needs to go down is House Bill 2109 to increase the death tax to 38%, or I need to perish in another state. Yeah. Sorry, kids, I got to die somewhere else because this death tax is just too high. Drive me across state lines. I was like, Nicole, hurry up. Get the car. Put me in the car. I got to die across state lines. The Reaper Son, $2 Super Chat. Brandy for WA Governor. I'm with her. Hey, let's not rule it out. We're thinking about it. Jason, Ferguson is going to sell out his fellow Democrats to present himself as a moderate. Ferguson is not stupid, and he's paying attention to what people around the country want. He will play moderate for a term or two, then make a presidential bid, a true snake in the grass. Or he wants to be Attorney General of the United States someday, and so he's looking at Josh Shapiro, who's going to be the next Democratic president, and he's like, I need to act moderate. Again, you're exactly right, Jason. Jethro McButterpants. How dare you not partake in the Lord's chicken? Is Chick-fil-A the Lord's chicken now?
Well, they don't work on Sundays, so they're so very, it's a religious corporation, I guess. So maybe that's why he's saying the Lord's chicken.
Gotcha. It's also very tasty. Is it really that good?
I mean, I think it's delicious.
Okay.
But I don't know that it's like, whoa.
Okay.
I don't know that it deserves the hype that it's gotten.
I've just never met a piece of chicken worth waiting in a line for.
Well, a lot of people came to the defense of their lines because they are very long looking, but they move very fast. So I think you'd be surprised at how quickly they keep things moving. It's kind of like In-N-Out Burger in California. They are very quick. They have people outside. They have different people in different lines. You know, you're kind of like.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just chicken is the most boring of all the proteins.
Do you have you bland, had the waffle fries,
dry.
Though.
Dry. I don't like French fries very much. I think that's wasted calories. Fries. If I'm going to have a potato, I want it mashed with butter and stuff in it.
Oh, see, I'm a French fry
so
gal.
I've never met, like I said, a piece of chicken that I would wait for.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
You might have to give it a test.
Okay. All right, somebody bring me some Chick-fil-A. I'm not waiting in line. Nightwolf, funny thing is, we went to war for independence for far less than what we have going on right now. 100%. It also puts that in context, right? It was also interesting about, makes me think of people differently. Like, now I'm going to look at people and be like, you would have totally been a loyalist. You would have totally snitched on the Boston Tea Party participants. Like, the people who are just so gung-ho about a politician, be it Trump or a Democrat, and like, this is my savior of all things. It's like, you would have been loyal to the crown, right?
I don't get it.
Nope. DC Bindwell, what's interesting is how the European leaders are finally stepping up to pay for this war. What took so long? They just needed Donald Trump to say what he said. Country guy, the criminal would probably have had a state funeral here in Washington. Yeah, they would have given him like an honorary. I mean, that's basically what they did with George Floyd.
Yeah.
It's like he got statues around the country.
Yeah, we probably have a statue.
Yeah, somewhere. So I'm sure Boston is working on commissioning. You know what? They'll probably just burn down the Tea Party Museum and then put a statue of the stabbing suspect there.
Yeah.
Like on the place, right?
I hope not. That would be very
sad.
Oh,
my God.
You know, back to the Trump thing, it's funny the J.D. Vance reaction, because I saw a lot of reaction coming out about him. He talks before that, and he's kind of he starts
he does. He was...
Though kind of snap back at Zelensky. And I saw so many people calling him unlikable for that. And I just think it's funny the way that they're just assigning that, because I really don't find J.D. Vance unlikable. I think the way that he's always carrying his kids off the plane and they're in pajamas and coats. And
he's got his dog. He just seems, German Shepherd.
Yeah, he has a history of pretty much, you know, every economical class that you have that you could be in this country. And he's just very likable to me.
Yeah.
And to just watch people label him that for no good reason, but just kind of pushing that out there. It's very comical to me to see people, because I think there is some concern he will be the next president.
He will be the next president. Unless something changes dramatically, I think that he'll probably be a two-term president after Trump. And so that's what they do, though, right? They tried to go after Trump. It obviously didn't work. The guy's Teflon. Yep. So then they went after Elon Musk. Like, he's weird, all this stuff.
Nobody cares.
And nobody cares. And so they're like, well, J.D. Vance.
Yeah, let's start that attack. Yeah, let it go 4 years. But
it's
He's proving to be very smart. I think J.D. is very smart.
Of course very smart. I mean, I haven't read all
even
his book.
Even smarter than I thought.
Yeah, I think he's doing a great job. And he's, you know, there is the element of J.D. Vance. Like, he was very anti-Trump. And I do think that's a legitimate point of critique and a legitimate line of questioning for J.D. Vance.
Yep.
During this, like, you just flip-flopped. You were totally anti-Trump, and now you're totally like, I'm absolutely lockstep with Trump.
I think he answers it well.
Right. Now, I've come around on Trump, so I understand, and I think you have to go back to that time and what the media was feeding you and just be honest and transparent about it.
Yep.
So I don't think J.D. Vance is above reproach. We're past that critique now. But, you know, he's clearly was in there having the president's back. Like, he was going to be the bad guy if he needed to be the bad guy. And then Trump's like, I'll be the bad guy, too.
Yep.
You know, and then they were both pointing at him.
And not
because
he was being forced to like, he stood his own, I think. So
100%.
Anyway, it's fun to watch.
Yeah. I agree. You know what else is fun to watch?
Yes, I do.
Our closing sanity check is very fun to watch. So speaking of this whole J.D. Vance will probably be the president for 2 terms after Trump, and Democrats are just flailing in the wind trying to find something that will stick against Republicans, and they all have lame talking points. It was the price of eggs 2 days into the Trump administration. Then it was Elon Musk and Doge, and they're just anything. They're trying to find anything. And you see every day, you see their coordinated messaging every day on X, where it'll be, and it was after this Trump meeting in the Oval Office, where it was this coordinated messaging where they're all basically posting the same thing, like, let's see if this sticks today and this sticks today. Bill Maher had the best point, is that Democrats, they don't see, and they still can't see, what's so darn likable about Donald Trump. And they really don't have anyone within the Democratic Party and Congress who has captured that sort of essence of likability. And great for us, he happened to use one of our elected senators as an example of this.
Voters aren't really savvy about the issues, but they do have it, may have made it clear what is important to them. Authenticity, balls, and charisma. Trump has that package, and so does Fetterman. He's only been a senator 2 years, and he's already more famous than most of his colleagues. Quick, I dare you to name this sad-looking lady from Washington State who's been in the Senate for 30 years.
Oh.
You can't teach charisma or balls.
You can't teach charisma. Poor Patty Murray. Quick, name this sad-looking lady. You know, she does often look very sad. Poor Senator
Always
Patty Murray.
Sad.
Oh, that was all over social media. People were having a dang good time with that. Boy, and it's from
good.
A Democrat. Look at this sad-looking lady from Washington State.
Years.
I can name her, but I don't know that many else could outside of the political bubble of Washington State. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support our show already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. We are independent media, so instead of being funded by a corporation, we're funded by you, and we love it that way. So if you have $5 a month to help out with the show, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Just click on support the show. And that's really it. Pretty simple. Pretty simple. That's it. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.
And remember to update your credit cards if they expired.
Apparently,
Nicole. Renew your subscription to Undivided.
That's true. If your card expires, you are no longer a subscriber to Undivided. So go check that.